World with Dr. Keith Suter.
Communique, that's the word. Communique, it's the French word for an official announcement. Communiques are usually polite, short, polite, highlighting points of agreement after global leaders meet. So it was the absence of any such statement after the G7 meeting in France that was the biggest statement of all. Yes, there was no communique. I see there's been many comments made about what was said and what wasn't said at the end of this year's G7 summit in France. One European official had enough, and he vented to journalists that would listen. He said that one delegation blatantly blocked almost everything, showing little will to really negotiate and move forward. Of course, it was an unnamed country that was clearly, well, I would suggest it was the United States that he was referring to. Dr. Keith Suter from Global Directions joins me this afternoon. Hello, Keith. How are you?
Yes, good afternoon, Brent.
Thank you for your time. The communique, it didn't come out, did it?
No, this was a deliberate decision by the French president. So the group of seven are the seven richest countries in the Western world. So this goes back 40 years ago, well before the return of China and India to the world scene. So they're rich Western countries plus Japan, and they get together each year to discuss matters. This year, the host, who was France, so President Emmanuel Macron, realized that there'd be no possibility of a unified statement because of Donald Trump. And so he announced beforehand there would be no formal final statement, which is the communique. So the lack of a communique is not a surprise. And, of course, it reflects, again, the growing isolation of the United States from its traditional allies like the UK, France, and Germany, that the United States is now very much on its own. Another factor in all of this is that the G7 began 40 years ago as a group of rich Western countries. Then with the collapse of the Soviet Union, they thought it'd be a good idea to include Russia. So we then moved from G7 to G8, or G7 plus one. But then, of course, in the last few years, Russia has invaded Crimea and is involved in the war in eastern Ukraine. And so the remaining members of the G7 expelled Russia. So we've gone from G8 down to G7. What is interesting is that President Trump, at this conference in France, argued that Russia should be readmitted. The Europeans are quite clear. They don't want Russia back in until it stops occupying other people's territory. And also, there's the argument that the G7 are democratic countries, whereas Russia clearly is not. And yet Trump was the advocate for Russia in this conference. So it adds still more to this mystery of what Donald Trump's final agenda is. And just to confuse things, at a media conference at the end of the event, Donald Trump said, "I change my mind often." There's a question of whether, because at the moment he's wrecking global stock exchanges with whether or not he's going to have further the trade war against China. And then he kept changing his various statements during the conference. And then somebody said, "Well, are you changing your mind?" And he says, "Oh, I change my mind frequently." So this is adding still more to the turmoil on the international markets, which if you're a pensioner in Australia living on your stock exchange income, you're having a hard time and you can blame Donald Trump.
A couple of questions that came from that. How can one person, that being Donald Trump, how can he hold the world's global finances almost to ransom?
Well, because the United States is still, for the moment anyway, still the number one economy, particularly in terms of its engagement with the global economy. The US dollar, for the moment, is still the basic international currency. Now, of course, that will change in 20 years' time, perhaps even less. It's China's ambition, obviously, to occupy that top spot. And so, at the moment, the United States is the center of the global economy in much the same way that Britain was in the 19th century. And that's the role that the Americans took over at the end of World War II because Britain had gone broke because of fighting the war. So the United States inherited that role. That's why they can play such a key role in destabilizing markets.
Crystal ball for me, if you would. What would the world look like with China at the top of the podium rather than the United States?
Well, this is the warning I keep giving people who are very antagonistic towards the United States, with or without Trump. You know, my view is that if you think the United States is bad, wait until the Chinese take over. Remember, the assumption was that China was going to become more democratic. That has simply not happened. It's become more and more autocratic, not necessarily more and more communist in the form of Mao Zedong. In fact, the current leader of China suffered under Mao Zedong. But it certainly is more autocratic, more dictatorial. The social credit movement, for example, which it's got, in other words, that it connects your bank account with your internet behavior and facial recognition technology. They then assess whether or not you're behaving as a good citizen. If you behave badly, for example, spend too much time on video porn, or you cross the street without waiting for the traffic lights to change, or any of those things, you then, in the end, become a discredited entity. That's the new jargon, Brent. Discredited entity.
Gosh.
Which means that if you want to book a ticket to go to your ancestral village once a year, they will just simply say, no, you don't have enough social credits. So it's a very dictatorial society blended in with information technology, where China is now becoming the number one country for IT, information technology, robots, etc. So life may be difficult with the Americans in number one. It's going to be even worse, in my view, when China becomes number one.
Crystal balling, can you see China becoming number one in 10, 20 years, Keith?
Well, President Xi, the Chinese leader, is aiming for 2049,
right,
which is the 100th anniversary of the Communist Revolution. But on many indicators, China is actually running ahead of schedule in terms of the number of automobiles produced in the world or the amount of steel produced in the world. China is going to the top of all those league tables. I've already made the comment about information technology, mm-hmm, where the Huawei Corporation, which is very controversial in Australia, the Huawei Corporation is now becoming a leader in the IT area. So it's not just Facebook and Amazon and Microsoft, etc., and Apple. We've now got Huawei. So the Chinese are actually, if anything, running ahead of schedule. Now, in the long term, China has immense problems. One are environmental problems. Of the world's 20 most polluted cities, 16 are in China. So they've got a major pollution issues. They've got demographic issues because of the brutality of the one-child policy. There's a shortage of citizens. So, in fact, China may grow old before it grows rich.
But, okay, they may have those 16 polluted cities out of the top 20, but they are a law unto themselves, aren't they?
They are, but you've still got to have people trying to live in those cities with bad pollution all over the cities. So they're the things that could hold them back. And, you know, there's a huge amount of debt within China. We worry a lot about the United States debt, but China's got its own forms of debt. So they've got their own debt mountain with some of their corporations and state-owned entities. So that's another potential risk for the global economy.
The G7 agenda, it included a focus on climate change. Again, they got nowhere with that. As a direct result of what, Donald Trump?
Yeah. The other countries in the G7 all accept that there is a problem with climate change, and they're going through all sorts of measures, including, let me just say, with a Conservative Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. His view is quite clear. Climate change is occurring and it's human-made. So there is a big difference between Johnson and Trump on climate change. Johnson is very much linked into the European and Japanese mindset on this issue of climate change. I think they're going to be making their own policies. Similarly, by the way, California has said, look, forget Washington, D.C. We will lay down our own regulations for electric cars, etc. So within the United States itself, you're seeing states that are now isolating Donald Trump.
Keith, what do you make of the invitation that was given to Australia so that Scott Morrison, as the Prime Minister, went along to the G7?
It's a great honour. Not to Scott Morrison personally, but although it was good that he went there, but in fact it's to Australia. A recognition that Australia can play a positive role in international relations. Because we're a member of the G20, and of course we hosted a G20 meeting in Brisbane a few years ago. In fact, I covered that for the media at the time. So G20, the top largest economies, top 20 largest economies, includes Australia and, of course, China and India and Indonesia. That's where they then get their look in. And in a sense, there are some people saying, look, forget the G7. Let's just focus on the G20, because that's most of the world's economy, most of the world's people. And Australia is active in that. But now we've received this invitation to be an observer at the G7, a great credit to Australia.
I see that the United States are hosting the G7 next year, and that Donald Trump wants to invite Russia.
Exactly, and that'll be your first crisis. Will the other leaders then decide to boycott the meeting?
You would think they would, wouldn't you?
Well, who knows what's going to be happening. It's, if Trump goes ahead with that threat of inviting Putin, which is his right to do so, because when you are the host country, you determine who gets invited. So Australia being at the G7 was at the invitation of the French president. So in the same way, you could end up with the American president deciding to invite the Russian president. But that would cause us a lot of anxiety amongst the European, well, all of the rest of the G7, the G6 countries.
Keith, can I just ask you before we go, Iran says Australia's standing in the Middle East has been damaged by the decision to join the United States in patrolling the Strait of Hormuz. The deputy chair of Iran's Foreign Relations Committee said Australia was taking a big risk by moving military forces to the region. Your thoughts on that?
Yes, there is a risk by deploying those forces, but we're doing so because we're an ally of the United States. Ironically, a lot of his European allies are not supporting the United States, but they've got their own separate policy of sanctions against Iran. But Australia obviously just follows the American lead. The real risk will be if there's a military incident in which Australians get killed. That's going to be the problem. How then does the Australian government react if one of our vessels gets attacked by Iranians? It's interesting that Scott Morrison went to the G7 via Vietnam, which would have been a good reminder of the risk of following the United States into what seemed to be a small operation, which ultimately ends up as a large one. And this is the worry in the Middle East, that a small operation can escalate through what's called mission creep into becoming a major problem for this country.
Keith, with these G7s, G8s and G20s, is it a slap on the back and a fest for the world's leaders to get together? Is there anything really of note ever come out of these meetings?
Not now. I'm a bit of a skeptic. When they started 40 years ago, it was a way of getting leaders to come together and chat about common issues. Now they've just become a vast photo opportunity where we spend all our time, you know, working out who is talking to whom, who's not talking to whom. You know, the big story of the last G7 was the fact that nobody wanted to be photographed near Donald Trump. So you had Donald Trump wandering around quite aimlessly while all the others were busy huddled chatting to themselves. So, yes, it's changed its nature. It's become a photo opportunity. It's mainly for the media. Whether it's worth all the expense, imagine being a French citizen having to pay for that event in Beirut and, the dislocation that was caused. So I'm a bit of a skeptic about that. G20, maybe, possibly, you know, it was a useful conference in Brisbane. And a lot of the work now is done through email and internet. You don't need to have people physically getting together.
Of course. Always a delight to chat with you. Thank you for your time, Dr. Keith Suter.
Thank you.
From Global Directions, that's our Dr. Keith Suter.